For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Bring Your Own, a bookish podcast for romance readers. I'm Brandy.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm Kayla, and today, you guys, we have a super special guest. If you listened to our first episode back after our break, you probably heard us talk about The Favorites and how we were going to do an entire episode dedicated to The Favorites by Lane Fargo, and we are. That is happening today. But we have Lane Fargo herself on the podcast, and we're so excited. Thank you so much, Lane, for coming on. And if you guys don't know, okay, Lane Fargo has a background in theater, women's studies, and library science, so it's only fitting that she now writes deliciously dramatic, unapologetically feminist stories for a living. She's the author of the novels The Favorites, obviously, They Never Learn, and Temper, as well as co-author on the best-selling Young Rich Widows series, and her work has been translated in over a dozen languages. Lane lives in Chicago with her partner, their pets, and an ever-expanding collection of books that she's for sure going to read before she dies, right? Right? Anyway, welcome, Lane. We're so happy to have you on. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about The Favorites.
Yes, of course.
So excited.
Lane, why don't you go first and tell us what you are currently reading and drinking?
I'm currently reading Deep Cuts by Holly Brickley, which comes out next month. I'm doing an event with her in the Chicago area, and I'm really excited. It's like a very early 2000s music nostalgia kind of vibe, this book, so I'm loving it. And then as far as what I'm drinking, I love like a fancy mocktail. That's really been what I've been into lately. I was just at Book of the Month the other week, and they made a favorites themed mocktail that had like a rose petal in it. It was incredible. So very into that.
That's amazing. I love that.
That was my Book of the Month pick. I got The Favorites.
Yay.
I am currently reading, I just started my reread of The Anthropocene Reviewed, which I might be saying that incorrectly. I'm so sorry, John Green. That's a big word that you put in your title. But I'm rereading that. I'm loving it. I loved it the first time, so I'm excited to revisit. And I'm currently listening to Everybody Clap, The Unmaking of June Farrow, finally, a year and
thank
a half
you.
After Kayla told
thank
me
you.
To listen to
thank
it.
You, thank you,
so
thank you.
Sorry. Yep. So I am loving that. I knew I would. I just didn't know if I was emotionally prepared for it at any given time. But that is what I am reading. And I am drinking my first ever Alani Nu, which inspired by Kendra always having an Alani Nu, which I love. And I got the cherry twist. Never had this flavor. So delish.
Live taste test.
Live taste test.
That was like, great. That was like 2 seconds of a sip.
Yeah.
Out of 10, make everybody Brandy? Sit here like gulp. Yeah. It's a little sweet. I'm going to give it a 6.
Oh, okay. Anyways.
Not bad.
I'll go. I am drinking a High Noon grapefruit. So no mocktail for me tonight. I got the real deal. And then I am reading two books. I'm still reading Shark Heart by Emily Habeck. I just like have not been reading recently. So I'm only like not even 100 pages in. Everything that I've read so far, I'm like, oh, how did you write this? Like, it's so good. Like, I'm obsessed. I just have not had time to read. And then I'm listening to The Blood Traitor by Lynette Noni, which is the last book in the Prison Healer series. And I'm having a good time, but slowly making my way through it.
I have an Olipop today. I have a cream soda Olipop. If you heard anything of last season, I was kind of on an Olipop journey. and I kind of fell off, and now I'm kind of back on. So I'm having the cream soda flavor right now, and it's very delish. It's probably my favorite Olipop flavor, I would say. And then I am currently listening to Immortal by Sulin Tan, which is a standalone fantasy. I never read her, what is it, Daughter of the Moon Goddess series, I think that's a duology or something like that. I never read that one, but I am reading this one. And then I am also reading physically What Happens in Amsterdam by Rachel Lynn Solomon. So really excited for that one.
Awesome. So we're just going to jump straight in with questions for you, Lane. The first one we had is that, as we briefly mentioned in your bio, your background is mostly in theater, women's studies, and library science. Was it always your goal to combine all three of those areas to write women-centered stories in your work?
No. I've had a very chaotic career path. I'm a Gemini, so I feel like I just thrive in chaos and changing my mind. So I went to school for English and theater. I wrote a few plays, one of which was about my ex-boyfriend, and he came to see it. So that was
fun. Oh my gosh. You tried to put him about that.
Yeah. And then I thought I wanted to be a theater professor. So I went to grad school, and 2 weeks into the first semester was like, oh no, I hate this. Oh no. So then I started working at this archive on campus and decided I wanted to be a librarian, went to school for that. So I got 2 master's degrees in a row.
Oh my God.
Neither of which I have used to this day. And then I graduated right into the recession in 2008, 2009. Oh. Ended up working for this tech company for 10 years, and I was really bored. And that was kind of what led me to writing. But it was very I did National Novel Writing Month, and I tried all these different genres, and it was just very chaotic. It's taken me a long time. Mm-hmm. I feel finally now I've found my thing, with the favorites specifically, but mm-hmm. even the books I've written have been really different. I feel I just have to experiment a lot to find what works for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I love amazing. That though. I feel like all my favorite authors, they don't stick to one thing. They're always doing a little bit of everything, but it still feels like them at the center of it. So I think that's cool that you're nothing really feels the same with each book.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a spoiler-free section about the favorite. So if you have yet to read it, you can still stick around for a little bit. And then once we get through these, we will have a spoiler-filled section, which I know a lot of our listeners are excited about, because we have a lot of thoughts. We know they have a lot of thoughts. We're going to go ahead and get started. But first, Lane, do you have an elevator pitch for the favorite to those who are listening and they haven't read yet? How would you describe this book?
It is a retelling of Wuthering Heights set in the world of Olympic ice dance, following the scandalous, tempestuous relationship between Kat and Heath, who are childhood sweethearts turned Olympic hopefuls and just hot messes in general.
Yeah. I love them.
You're hot mess in capital letters.
And we love it. And we love it.
Yeah. And we know that you've said that Scott Moore and Tessa Virtue's 2018 Moulin Rouge helped inspired this story. How did you come across that, and then where did the story kind of start from there? What about them caught your attention?
So I've been obsessed with the Olympics my whole life. It's the only time I care about sports. When the Olympics are on, I care about every sport so much, and then yes. as soon as they're over, I don't care anymore.
4 years later,
So I saw that performance, and I mean, obviously, for anyone who has seen it, and if you haven't, you need to go watch it right now. They have the mm-hmm. most incredible chemistry and connection, and everyone on the internet at the time was going just totally feral, wanting to know what their deal was. Are they a couple? Are they just friends? And I found all that discourse around them really interesting, and started thinking about what would it be like to have that kind of intense partnership with someone. I mean, they started skating together when they were little kids and have been through all sorts, not quite as much drama as Kat and Heath, but a lot of, injuries and various things. So that was the spark of it. And then I the favorites came about again, this roundabout way, lots of failures leading to ultimate success, I guess. I was trying to write a thriller about rival ice dance teams, and then I was also trying to write this gothic romance, and neither one of them was working. And I kept going back and forth between them. And then finally, I wanted some inspiration for the Gothic one. So I was like, I'm going to reread Wuthering Heights. I would love that book as a teenager. Maybe it'll like spark something. So I reread it. And then I was like, what if I combined these two things and made it like, I started, before the book had a title, I was calling it Wuthering Ice.
Oh, I love that.
That was
so
like
funny.
My little nickname for it. And that sort of, yeah, so it was all kind of mashed together. So I've had a lot of people be like, is it based on Tessa and Scott? And I'm like, no, Kat and Heath really are nothing like them. They seem like very nice, like well emotionally balanced people. But certainly seeing that performance and then everyone's reaction to it really like lit up my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was watching that on repeat in 2018, just like over and over and over and over. And every time an edit pops up on TikTok, I'm still watching it.
Yeah.
Yes. Some people watch it like weekly just for their mental health, and I support that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you, like, once you got the idea, did you just find yourself watching a whole bunch of other ice skaters? Or, like, did you just really focus in on them? Like, how much did you have to familiarize yourself with the sport?
I had to do a ton of research because I'd always been, like, a very casual fan. Like, I would watch the Olympic events, maybe sometimes nationals or worlds. But my skating analysis was basically like, I like that song. That dress is pretty. Like, I didn't know anything about really like the rules, and ice dance is very much its own thing. It's got like a lot of specific, stuff there. So yeah, I did a ton of research to get all those details right. And I looked into, there's so many different skaters and ice dance teams, inspired Kat and Heath and like the other characters in the book. Like, it was very much a composite thing where I was like taking a little detail from here and another one from there, and yeah.
After reading, I was like, oh, like I think I learned so much about the sport, and I love when that happens. Like, now I can go and tell people like, oh no, this is actually how ice dancing works. Like, I know because I read the favorites. Like,
yeah. So on our little corner of Bookstagram where the three of us are, we read mostly romance. You know, we dabble obviously a lot in other genres, but most of what we read is romance. And from what I've seen on my little corner, so many romance readers have like flocked to this book. Did you expect a lot of romance readers to pick up this book, especially considering, like, you know, you have a large background in thrillers? And then have you kind of noticed that newer audience with this release?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I definitely thought there would be some like overlap and interest with the romance readership. And I hope there would be, because it's such a like huge and passionate section of readers. It's been interesting because like sometimes people will call the favorites a romance and I'm like, it's not. And I say that as someone who loves romance novels. Like, I read a ton of them. I really love the genre. There's a lot of stuff in the favorites that like I certainly would not have included if I was writing a romance novel, which some of which we will talk about in the spoiler section. But I think, I mean, Wuthering Heights, like, it's still a debate as to whether that's a romance. I don't think it is, but some people do. And so I guess like if they haven't decided about that, then my book's gonna kind of be in the middle too. But yeah, I've loved it. Like, seeing so many people like just passionately responding to Kat and Heath's love story, toxic and messed up as it may be.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I can't wait to get into the spoilers to talk a little bit more about that, because absolutely, you're so right. Like, they just, I think it toes the line so beautifully too, of the romance and the drama and everything. We all listened to this one on audio. The audiobook for this one is incredible.
Oh, you did? Okay, cool.
Yes, we are all huge audiobook girls. So when we saw this one, we were obsessed. One of the standouts for the audio is Johnny Weir, who is a professional figure skater, and he plays Ellis Dean. And you said before that you kind of had Johnny in your mind when you were creating Ellis, but was it ever a possibility in your head that he would be voicing Ellis in the audiobook?
No. The way that came about was the producer emailed me just to introduce herself and asked me if I had any casting ideas. And it was more so just to be like, oh, someone who's like this, or like, this is the type that I had in mind. So I was like, well, my delusional author dream is that Johnny Weir plays Ellis. And she was like, oh, yeah, I could see. Yeah, he's totally that character. We'll try and find someone who sounds like him. Great. And I was like, great. And then a few days later, she emailed me back and was like, you know what? Let's just ask. Like, he can say no, but we'll put out an offer and see if he says yes. And I again, was like, oh, sure. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, it's so cool that she's willing to do that and that he'll, like, know the book exists and, like, okay, great. And then, yeah, he said yes. It still blows my mind. Like, I don't... I've actually been, so I'm not an audiobook girly. Like I find it hard to concentrate on audio. My mind kind of wanders, but I've been listening to this audiobook. I usually don't listen to my audiobooks, but this one I just had to because of the full cast and he's hilarious. Like I'm
so
just,
good. So good.
It's like, such a trip to hear him.
Yeah.
And we also were like huge fans of Christine Lakin. So like when we saw that she was Kat, we were just, we've been telling every single person that's interested in this book, like, do it on audio, like, do both at the same time. Like, it's such an experience. So I would have never guessed that you weren't an audiobook reader because it's so well done.
Yeah, Christine is so good. Like, I've been listening, like I said, I think I'm still in, like, part one. So I'm still making my way through, like, while I do the dishes and stuff. And she is so perfect as Kat. Like, her performance is just, it's like making me feel things that I didn't even feel when I was writing. Like, she just has that character perfectly. So I couldn't be happier.
Yay. Absolutely.
So Heath is described in the story as being racially ambiguous. And I think you note that he is, people usually assume that he's either Mexican or Middle Eastern. And he, like, doesn't know his background. He was in foster care. And there's even a moment in the book where he experiences some, like, racism that he's going through TSA. Can you talk about, like, the reasoning behind making him racially ambiguous, especially in, like, a world where he is famous, like, and that is always going to be a topic of discussion?
Yeah, that really comes from the original, from Wuthering Heights. That's also a topic of debate. Like, no one really seems to know. I mean, in the original book, Heathcliff is described in various ways. It's very clear, I think, from the text that he's not white, but it's not clear what his race is, and he doesn't know. He's an orphan, doesn't know his background. And so I think that's so key to that character, because, like, the reason that he becomes so obsessed with and, like, bonded to Kathy in the original and Kat in the favorites is that he doesn't have any sense of identity or family or culture or anything. So, like, he just latches onto her and she's his everything. So I wanted to maintain that in this book. And also, like, skating is such a white sport. Like, it is just, it is not diverse at all. So I wanted to kind of touch on what that would be like for him without, you know, getting out of my lane as a white author and trying to write about that experience completely. But I wanted to make sure to address it somewhat.
Yeah.
I love the art that you had commissioned, like, seeing him, like, come to life. That was really nice. Cause I think because he was racially ambiguous, it could have been so easy for readers to be like, yeah, oh my God.
It's hanging up behind her for those listening.
we'll have to, reshare it on our Instagram at Bring Your Own Pod. But I love that you had that, so readers can reference something. Cause I know a lot of times, like, they don't pay attention to that stuff. They would just go and you know, use the Scott Moore fan cast and be like, that's Heath. But, like, I'm glad that you were like, no, like, this is Heath.
I want to do I'm still planning to do this, but I was like, I'm gonna do a post that's like other ice dancers and skaters that people could use in their, like, fan edits instead of Scott, because Heath is not white.
Yeah,
but there's so few, honestly. Like, the sport is so white. Like, there's really not a lot to choose from, unfortunately. So
And you
we'll look for you.
You have done, I did read an interview where you gave, like, your fan casts for Kat and Heath. Would you mind saying those for our listeners?
Sure. I think the two I usually say for Kat are Molly Gordon from The Bear. I really love her. And Margaret Qualley, who has a dance background and is just incredible. And then for Heath, this man is going to take a restraining order out against me if I mention him one more time. But Brandon Perea, who's in Twisters and Nope, and I think he would be the perfect Heath. When I was writing, I was sort of picturing, like, a younger Riz Ahmed, but he's, like, too old now, unfortunately. I mean, not for me, but for
Heath. That's so funny.
So we've kind of talked a little bit about this, but this book has gotten a huge reaction out of people, right? Like, I've literally had people, like, texting me when they were reading it, like, you know, like, freaking the fuck out, for lack of a better term, to be honest. But did you expect people to have such strong feelings and reactions about this story and characters?
I mean, like, as an author, you always hope that people have a really strong reaction. But no, it is taking me aback. It is like people think of them as real, which is incredible. Like, that's such a compliment. But I've gotten some... Well, more stuff we can talk about in the spoiler section, but like some messages where people will be like, explain yourself about these very real people. I'm upset.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Speaking of, we're going to jump into the spoiler section now. So if you have not read The Favorites yet, pause, go read, and then come back. And if you have read The Favorites, stick around because we're getting into the juicy stuff. So there are so many moments throughout the story where we talked about, like, oh, we would love to know what is going through Heath's mind right now, Heath's POV, like, what could possibly be going through his head. Like, for example, when he's going to Russia, hooking up with Bella, finding out Bella is pregnant, just to name a few. So at any point in the story, did you ever consider showing his point of view or have him talk about what was going through his head?
I didn't. I never thought about having his point of view. I thought about having Bella's for a while. Like, that was in some early drafts. There was some stuff from Bella's point of view. Okay. And Heath is like, all his trauma and everything, which I'm sure we'll talk about, like, he just can't really articulate how he's feeling or what he's thinking a lot, which, like, as a writer was really, like, this was something my editor was like, well, what's he feeling here? And I'm like, he cannot tell us. Like, he just, poor baby. So I tried this came out a lot more in the edits, like, he's really into music. And so when he's listening to different songs, like, the songs are chosen very intentionally to be kind of a peek into his psyche at that moment in time, because, like, that's how he's kind of communicating that or, like, dealing with that. But yeah, it's just, he's just one of those characters where he's not gonna come out and talk about his feelings. He, like, just doesn't have the capacity. He needs, like, 10 years of therapy before he can do that.
Yeah he does, king. Would you ever consider, like, a bonus chapter or anything like that, or, like, forever we're not touching Heath's brain?
So I actually, just this week, my editor asked me if I would consider doing a little bonus story, and I pitched doing one from Heath's point of view. I have this whole idea that it's like a playlist. It's like the songs he's listening to, but then I would have, like, some stuff actually from his point of view. So what the timing on that would be, but you are hearing it first. So
BYO exclusive. Oh my God. Breaking news. I love this.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's so exciting.
I will be seated.
Not to put Brandy in the hot seat, but Lane, you caused Brandy to crash out so bad reading this book with Heath and his actions. Like, homegirl went through it.
Lane, I was on the phone with Kayla, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? I was like, this isn't gonna happen, right? And Kayla said, keep reading. And I went, you're fucking lying to me. I went through every emotion.
This was before the book came out. We got the audiobook through PRH Audio, and this was like a month before the book came out. And she's like, I'm gonna Google it. I'm gonna Google the ending. I said, girl, it's not even out yet. You can't Google it. So you're not. There's gonna be no help there. But yeah, it was
fun. Just had to suffer.
Yeah. It was worth it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say you're doing that for Heath, Brandy will be the first one in line. Like, I need to know what that man was thinking.
No, the thought process. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. It is clear from the start that Kat and Heath are trauma bonded to one another. Kat losing her father and having an abusive alcoholic brother, and then Heath growing up in foster care, like sleeping in that barn, like literally not having a home. I know you said that they were inspired by Wuthering Heights, and I've never read that book. So can you talk about crafting their relationship specifically for this story and how all that came about?
I mean, that is also very based in Wuthering Heights. Like, there's just so much trauma in that. Mm-hmm. And in trying to, like, I think it's like Emily Bronte is writing about what we would call trauma now. They didn't really, like, have language around that in the same way back when she was writing. So luckily I am married to a therapist. And he helped me kind of like he recommended some books to read and like talked me through some of the psychological underpinnings of like their attachment styles and all of that good stuff. So that was really helpful in sort of grounding it in our current understanding of psychology.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. It comes off so believable as a reader too. Like, you understand why so many of the things that they're doing, especially at when they're younger and like just getting to California and all of that. Absolutely. So well done. So many people, including myself, thought that either Heath or Bella was going to die, especially because you realize like halfway through part one, like these two are not in the interviews, like we have not heard from them. So did you ever actually consider killing either of these characters or any other characters?
At first, okay, so the original ending, because this is, remember, I come from a thriller writing background, so I'm used to writing like dark stuff. Yes. I was like, it has to be dark. So it was Heath was going to die at the Olympics, like same setup, but then he just like didn't make it.
He's not.
And then Bella, like in that version, she kind of had something to do with it. Like, she wasn't quite the same character. And the final scene in like the original was Bella and Kat like at the house in Illinois, and Kat like kind of luring Bella out to skate on the frozen lake, knowing that it's going to crack and she's going to kill her. That was the original ending.
Your faces. Oh my God. Because Kat found out that Bella had something to do with it.
Yeah. So it was like revenge. And you can, okay, so you can thank the figure skater Jason Brown for this not happening, because I went to see Stars on Ice while I was working on this, and I saw him skate, and he was so, like, if you've ever seen any of his programs, he was so like joyful and effervescent and just like made me feel so happy. And at intermission, I turned to my partner and I was like, it has to have a happy ending. They deserve to be happy. Yeah. And that was like what changed it. Because otherwise it would have been a dark, dark ending.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thank you, Jason. Brown.
Jason Brown. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Jason Brown.
It was incredible. It was a romance reader inside of you too, a little bit, that jumped out. You're like, oh, maybe they should have a happy ending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they just, it's like they go through so much. I just like couldn't do any more to them.
And
like when I was reading it, you know, I was like super, super scared, obviously, that Heath specifically was gonna die. And when like all the stuff started happening at the final skate in Russia, when he like freaking, you know, falls apart and starts bleeding, I was like, no way is this woman really gonna kill him on the ice publicly in front of all of these people. Mind you, this was before with I had Kat. Read.
I couldn't do it. I tried, but I couldn't do it.
Yeah. This was before I had read any of your other books. So, like, I hadn't read They Never Learn, for example, at that point. I have read it now. But, like, I, you know, didn't know about your thriller background at this point. And so I was like, there's just no way she could do this, right? So, yeah, that was crazy. One thing that we all noticed was that when Kat learns about Bella's pregnancy in the last little bit of the book, she, at least outwardly... This is, by the way, when Brandy really, really, truly crashed out.
You're not alone.
Yeah. Is kind of, I don't like want to use the word chill, but again, she's just kind of like, oh, you know, I don't know. But obviously, like in her head, she's like taken aback. She's shocked, right? But again, we think she handled it pretty well. Do you see that kind of like as a testament to how she grew over those 3 years that she took off? And had it happened earlier in the book, would she have reacted a lot differently, like, you know, taking Bella out or something, you know, punching Heath, something, you know?
Yeah, I think earlier on she would have. I mean, when she caught them together in Vancouver, there was like furniture thrown. So, I think it's growth. It's also, there's like a lot of things going on there. like when she sees Bella collapse like that and like that she's been kind of acting sick and everything, I think Kat is fearing maybe, I mean, like Bella's mom just died of cancer. Like she's fearing that there's something really wrong, and it's almost like a relief that she's just pregnant. The whole thing of like Heath wants to be a father and Kat doesn't want to be a mother, that was really important to me to have in there as someone who like does not want kids and never has. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a part of Kat that's like honestly relieved. It's like he gets to have this thing that he really wants, and she doesn't have to be a mom, so it's kind of like a good solution. But yeah, people are so upset about this. I get so many messages.
I can I explain my stages of crash out?
Yes, please.
The first one was when she found them in Vancouver. Crash out number one, seeing the crime. Number two was when Bella came 3 years later and was like, yeah, we've been hooking up while you've been gone. That was number two. And then number three was the baby. But I will say, after sitting with this book, I thought about it nonstop for weeks, Lane. Like, I constantly top of mind. Everything happens for a reason. Life is beautiful. Like, the birds are singing. Like, everybody's where they're supposed to be. Yeah.
I talked her off a ledge.
Because I guessed that she was pregnant when she came to get Kat. When she came to get Kat to come tell her to come back in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. She's not pregnant yet then.
But no. Yeah, so then I was like, well, she can't get pregnant because they're not going to keep fucking while Kat is there. Yes, they are.
I got this email from a reader that was like bullet points, like explain yourself, like what happened between them, like off page basically. So I felt like I was writing fan fiction about my own characters.
Oh my God.
And what I told this reader.
That's amazing.
Was like Bella and Heath, they've always been attracted to each other, kind of feelings for each other when they were skating together and everything. It's just like different. It's more of like a friends with benefits, kind of like affectionate comfort, but not super passionate. Yeah. And so to me, this is under the category of like, if I was writing a romance novel, I would never do this ever. And so I get people who are romance readers and who think is a romance novel and get like so angry at me. And I'm like, okay, but like, it's not a romance novel. I'm so sorry. Like, I know the rules. Like, I would never do that if I was writing a romance novel. But so for these characters though, like Heath is so obsessed with Kat and like his whole life is about like what she wants and you know, he only goes into skating because of her and all of this. And I felt like he really needed to be with someone else for a while to like individuate from Kat and to like think about what he wants and like what he feels when he's not around her and all that. So I felt like it was a big part of his process to getting to the place where he and Kat maybe like could have a good relationship as opposed to just obsession and toxicity. And I always imagine him and Bella, like when they're together in LA during the years that Kat's gone, I don't think they were hooking up that frequently. I think it was like just every once in a while, you know.
That line about the Adele concert killed me.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And so he, like, I'm sure at some point was, like, trying to be all, like, boyfriendy with her, was like, I'm going to be your man. And she was like, no, you aren't. Like, absolutely not. Because she's not the relationship girl. So I think her kind of, like, putting him in his place like that. I don't know. I think it was good for him. I think it helped his growth. Yeah.
Even absolutely.
I was just going to say, like, the quote that when Kat and Heath kind of finally reunite afterwards, after Bella comes to Illinois and, you know, learning about the pregnancy, everything. He says, I think the line is like, I made my existence about you for like far, far too long, right? So he was kind of acknowledging all of the, you know, the trauma bondedness of their relationship, right? And not that there was anything necessarily wrong with it, but for him, you know, to be able to kind of recognize that and recognize for him how that was toxic and how that was affecting his life. And so I liked how he also kind of grew over those 3 years that they had apart, even though it ended on really bad circumstances, right? But I, you know, like to see his growth as well over those past 3 years. I mean, everybody grew. Bella, Heath, Kat, all of them.
Yeah.
I love when books make me feel so deeply. Like, that's all I want from a story. Like, that's why I love stories. And like, I just felt every emotion so deeply reading The Favorites, like, so incredible.
Well, I'm sorry you were on the floor, but thank you.
Yeah. In the best way. In the best way.
I'm curious now, did Kat ever have like relationships then outside of Heath?
During those 3 years?
When they were apart.
I actually cut something that was a reference to that. I had like a little thing during her like 3 years away that she, I don't know. I ended up cutting it kind of like for space, but also just it felt like a distraction. And like, I didn't feel like she needed to go on that journey as much as he did. Her thing is more like needing to not care so much about winning and like realize there's more to life. So, but I did have a thing in there where I had her like sleep with like just like one night stands, like a man and then a woman, and be like, maybe I am bi, but like, I mostly just love Heath and I'd rather be single. Like she just kind of went on, I don't know. Wow. It was kind of a, like a little paragraph and I ended up cutting it, but we can have that as headcanon if you want.
Love yeah. that. We will. Yeah, absolutely.
Cat bisexual? Heck yeah, yeah, we'll take it. Oh my God. Get on our team, girl. Yeah. Yeah. Also, did you follow Charlie XCX this like past, like she had a big year this past year. I don't know if you were aware. She's a singer. She has a song. I mean, some people don't know who she is.
So. Icon.
Sorry. Yeah.
There you go. Icon.
She's not
legend,
just a singer,
star.
Kendra. Come on. Icon.
Okay. Well, okay. But because we were just talking a lot about Kat and Bella. Every time I hear Girl So Confusing Now by Charlie XCX, I feel like that's like a perfect Kat and Bella song. Yeah.
That's her anthem.
Miss Kayla here makes edits, and I'm like, girl, you should make an edit now to.
Yeah,
Bella and Kat to that song.
I did
say
I was
going to
do that. You're right.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. Yeah, I love. There's a lot of Charlie on my official favorites playlist, but it's like her previous album because Brat wasn't out yet when I was writing it.
Love that.
Yeah. Do you think Bella's motivation when she first hooked up with Heath was like out of spite, or was it out of like her just being hurt?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's mostly spite and revenge, and she's just like angry at Kat and wants to get back at her in that moment. But I think there's also like, I don't know. Bella is just like lying to herself a lot about how she feels about Heath. I think she like cares about him a little bit more than she would like to admit. And I think when she was skating with him, she like didn't cross that line. And part of it was because of her friendship with Kat. She's like, I'm not going to cross that line. And now she's just like, screw it. Like, this is it. Like, I'm just going to do what I want. And then for Heath, it's like, he thinks they're done. She like, this is the thing. I don't want to be all like Ross Geller. We were on a break. Right. But like, they get in an argument and Kat like throws the engagement ring on the floor. And like, you know, it's a little bit of a gray area. So I think in Heath's mind, it's like, he's really hurt. He's devastated. He thinks it's over between him and Kat. But I think he's also just like wants to do what he thinks is the worst thing he could do to like blow it up for good. So he doesn't have to be on this emotional roller coaster anymore. Like, I don't think it's a conscious thing, but like subconsciously, that's what he's doing. But what I always say too is like to Kat, him and Bella skating together was the real betrayal, and like sex does not matter to her as much. So when people are like, how could she forgive them for, I'm like, if she forgave them for the skating, she can forgive them for this. Like, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. Also, like, Kat used sex so much to her advantage when it came to Heath throughout this book. So it's kind of like, you know, she can't really be like, oh, you did this. Cause like, then I feel like she would have to come clean and be like, well, there were times when I just did it with you cause I wanted to get what I want. Yeah. So,
There have been times, at least over the past couple years, where I did at one point say that if I ever read cheating in a book, like, I was always like, team, absolutely no cheating ever. But I, have grown
we like a little cheating on this podcast.
I have grown over the past couple years. But I am curious then, because of like the point in the book where that happens, when Bella and Heath partnered up again, would Heath have ever, or not again, excuse me, for the first time, would Heath have ever slept with Bella, do you think, at all during that point? Or was it only when he was really hurt, thought it was over, that he ever would do something like that?
I don't think he would have slept with her back then. Yeah. He might have, I mean, they kissed on the ice that one time. I feel like nothing else in, I mean, this is like, again, my like headcanon, but like nothing else happened between them at that point. But I think he might have been, like, he's attracted to her. But I think his whole plot at that point is he's gonna get Kat to like beg him
want
to come
back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he wouldn't want to like blow it up at that point, where after Vancouver, when he's like, you know, we made it to the Olympics, we didn't win gold, she's gonna throw me away forever now, I'm gonna just like hurt her before she can, yeah, like it's, I think that was really what drove him to it in that moment.
Yeah.
And when you say it like that, I just want to give him a huge hug. Like, he thought his worth boiled down to whether he could win her a gold medal. Like, that hurts my heart. Heath.
I know. Yeah, it's like he thinks he's just, like, worthless to her because they didn't win. And, like, that's his whole life experience leading him to believe that. And it is so sad. Like, it's really, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why he needed to go on this little journey on his own, you know?
Yeah, he needed it. And after reading it too, I had so much, I was more critical in an understanding way, because I love Kat, I love her character, and I love her journey, and getting to see all of her flaws. I love a flawed female main character. I love reading that. But I also, after sitting with the book, was able to have a lot more empathy for Heath, because in my head, when I was crashing out to Kayla, I was like, what did she ever do to him? Like, blah, blah, blah. And like, then you look back and you're like, he was never her number one when they were younger. Like, it was always winning. It was always gold. It was always figure skating. So like, of course he's going to be hurt. Like, it's just, they just show that hurt in different ways. I just, yeah. It's so well done. Mm-hmm. There's so much nuance to their relationship.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like she trauma bonded with skating and like Sheila Lynn and all of that. Yeah. Like, her mom died. And that's like her original thing that she's so attached to, that she needs to like grow and give up a little bit. And then for him, it was all about her. Yeah, they need so much therapy, these poor kids.
Yeah.
Bless
them. You mentioned Sheila, and I'm honestly shook that we haven't like talked about her yet. She's such a powerhouse in this novel. And like, I think when I first met her in the book, I did not expect her to be as like, important to Kat's story. Yeah, influential to Kat's story, and even Heath's. Like, can you talk a little bit about her character? Was there anything that changed about her from like the first draft to the last? Or was her story like always the same from the moment you started?
She was pretty consistent. I felt like I knew who she was right away. Like, she's just so driven, and she's like, to the point that she isn't like loving towards her children. She's like, she's not a really happy person. Like, she's just been so obsessed with winning, and it's kind of corrosive. But I mean, I love Sheila. I just love like a powerful badass bitch. And I wanted to create this character who felt larger than life. And then like Kat sees her in this certain way and like puts her up on a pedestal, and then getting to know Bella and Garrett, maybe realizes like she's not perfect. Yeah. She's got her own flaws. Yeah. But yeah, she stayed pretty consistent. There was one, like the big thing that changed with Sheila, and it was more like cat changing, was the scene where they're in Paris and Sheila calls Kat and they're like arguing on the phone. That scene was so difficult, because it was supposed to be like they had this big argument, but then Kat and Heath went back and kept training with her, and I just like kept writing the scene and Kat like wouldn't, like it was like she wouldn't obey my outline. And finally I was like, she wouldn't put up with this. She would like kick her to the curb. She would fire her and they would go off on their own. And so I just changed that. But it was like on the day as I was writing that scene, I realized it was like something they couldn't overcome.
I also think it's so interesting. The twins, Garrett and Bella, the very different directions that they end up going in, like, you know, like Garrett ends up, you know, leaving the sport, gets in a healthy relationship, you know, like he finds somebody. Bella, you know, throughout this entire, well, not the entire book, but, you know, for a large portion of the book, she's in this weird friendship, frenemy relationship with a cat. And then, you know, she ends up sleeping with her man, who wasn't kind of her man at the time, has a baby, you know, it's just like all kinds of different things that they, you know, totally different. They end up in totally different areas of their life, you know, and I think the way that their mom affected them each in a different way, it was really interesting to see. So I really enjoyed that aspect too.
Yeah. I mean, Bella is so much like her mom, and Garrett is like a sweetie. Like he's like the nicest man I've ever written and ever will write. Like if you read They Never Learn, you know, the type of man that I usually.
Yes.
You think they're nice. Garrett, you think they're like, sweet.
Sweetheart.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of jumping off talking about where everybody ended up, I think we all agree, and most readers, once they get to the end of the book and take a deep breath, kind of also agree that Bella and Heath and Kat, like, all ended up exactly where they needed to be. Like, I was just nodding my head the entire time during the end of that book. But did you ever give any thought to them not ending up together? Once you were past the part where Heath was going to die, was there ever a reality where they were both alive and not together?
Yeah, I thought about having Heath and Bella end up together and making it sort of a, like that they could love each other in a way that was, like, healthy and sustainable, where he and Kat were always going to be fiery. And but the more I got to know Bella, the more I was like, that's not, like, that wouldn't be a happy ending for her. Like, she's not, she doesn't want to be someone's wife. She doesn't, like, she, I think her becoming a mother is, like, almost this, like, healing thing for her, because it's a way to kind of deal with some of the stuff that she, like, her relationship with her own mom, and to, like, do it better with her daughter. But I love, like, the whole thing where she has a boyfriend who, like, doesn't live with her and travels a lot. And, like, that's ideal for Bella. Like, she does not
We talked about that, too.
Heath would be so exhausting to her if they, like, lived together and were a couple. She's like, leave me alone. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, like, just given their history and, like, we are romance girls at heart, so we were rooting for them. But just seeing their history and all that they've gone through, and we were really hoping that they would end up where they ended up. But I also love that you threw in that little tidbit about, like, they've broken up a bunch in the last 10 years and they are still Heath and Kat. They didn't just automatically fix everything about them just because of the Olympics and what they went through. Like, I thought that was so realistic and true to the characters, which was so nice.
And, like, the makeup sex will be fire, but, like, they are going to fight. Exactly. That's just who they are.
Yeah.
And even just, like, the, again, going back to, like, some of the small, like, tidbits that you put in there at the end, like, her and the engagement ring and not, like, you know, always wearing that, things like that, you know, just, I really enjoyed that kind of, that ending, that it wasn't, it just felt really true to them rather than just being like, okay, it's all perfect, you know, like, because that's not how it always works, you know, especially with a story like this, you know, it just doesn't seem quite right. But writing this book for you, what was the hardest scene to write?
I don't know if there's, like, one particular scene, but I would say the biggest challenge of the whole book was just figuring out what to include and what not to include. Like, I wrote so much more material than ended up in the book, and it covers, like, a long span of time. So trying to figure out, like, what to show and, like, what to show in the documentary versus through Kat's point of view, and what to kind of, like, gloss over and do time jumps, like, that was really difficult. I don't know. I mean, probably the scene that gave me the most trouble is that one I was talking about in Paris, where I was just trying to get Kat to do what it said in the outline, and she was like, right. Nope.
Do you write, like, because this book is kind of like mixed media in a bit, like, were you writing all the interviews first, or did you write everything in order, or did you write, like, Kat's point of view all the way through and then add the interviews back in? Like, how did you approach that?
I am, like I said, chaotic Gemini. I do not write in order. It is a mess. It is just, so I actually did for this book, and I don't think I'll do this again. Like, it was just for this, cause it's Kat kind of telling her story. I did dictation for a lot of it. I just, like, spoke into my like voice memos on my phone and then put it through a transcription software. And I would just talk for, like, an hour pacing around my office, like, as Kat kind of telling the story. And a lot of that didn't end up in the book, but it kind of gave me, like, something to go on. And then I would write the documentary stuff when I, like, needed a break from Kat, because that went a lot, that stuff was a lot faster to write, because it's just dialogue. And like, I used to write plays, so, like, I love writing dialogue. But then that stuff took forever to edit, because it was, like, cutting it down to just the essentials, like you would for a documentary, right? Like, you have a real all this one footage, and you have to cut it down.
And then, do you have a personal favorite scene in the book?
I love that scene when Heath comes back from Russia. That was one of the first ones I wrote and, like, kind of kept going back to as a touchstone in the book. Like, that just felt like it captured their relationship. Like, I don't know, his whole smug, like, hello, Katerina. Like, ugh. Stop being hot. You're so annoying.
Yeah. That was definitely, because, you know, obviously I was having like a really good time reading this, but when that moment happened, that was like the first moment where I like, I like stood up, you know.
Yeah,
I was like,
it makes
oh,
you sit up, you know?
So yeah, mm-hmm. that's really going on. Mm-hmm. My personal favorite is that's actually kind of funny. It's a scene where we're actually happy for a little bit. It's the scene when Kat and Heath are in Paris and they have like a night to themselves. They won, you know, they're feeling good, and they go out and they like just have a night to themselves. They go out on a date, they go dancing, and you know, the next morning is a little, you know, crazy. But that scene was just like a nice little reprieve, you know, from all the chaos. Mm. So
that one was fun to write. I was like Googling like nightclubs and like restaurants in Paris, and just because this was during COVID when I was writing it, so I was just like imagining myself, you know, having a night out in Paris. It was really fun.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one.
We are going to play a quick little song association game, because a huge scene in this book is Kat and Heath dancing to The Last Time by Taylor Swift. If you are on Instagram and you see every post involving the favorites, every music that, like, every time music is selected for a post on Instagram for this book, that song will be playing, to the point where I know people who haven't read it yet, they're like, why do people keep like using this song? So we are going to list you some of the main characters, and then if you just had like a Taylor Swift song or any song that you wanted to, but if you wanted to do Taylor, that'd be pretty cool, that you associate with these characters. Mm-hmm. So I'll go
first. I did
first.
This for my publisher once, and now I forget everything I said.
Well, you can take your time.
Okay.
So first on the list, and then we'll just like round robin it. Ellis Dean, what is his Taylor Swift song or song of choice?
I Did Something Bad.
Yes.
That's like, oh, that's so good. Okay, and what about Bella Lind?
Bad Blood.
That's easy. Okay, what about Angel Baby Garrett?
Oh man, what did I say for him before? I don't know. You guys might have to help me out with this one. I like all the like tortured, delicate, like angsty Taylor songs.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I feel like Garrett would be like a Mirrorball type character little bit.
Oh yeah.
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 Francesca.
Bitch.
Oh man, what's that one she wrote about Joe Jonas's ex?
Better than revenge. Better than revenge.
Yeah.
Better than revenge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so fucking funny. What about Sheila herself?
Oh, Mastermind, I think, was the one I had for Sheila.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then Heath.
My Tears Ricochet.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's like the most Wuther Knights Taylor song. Yeah. So.
That's my favorite Taylor song.
And then I know Cats because it's my favorite Taylor song, which is Out of the Woods.
Yeah.
That bridge. So good.
So good.
Oh, Is It Over Now would be such a good like Kat and Heath song.
Yeah. When I heard that one, and How Does It End, both of those, I'm like, that's
Okay, then do you have one for Heath and Bella?
No, I honestly just like don't think their love is like worthy of a Taylor Swift song. It's more like friendship and
period. Period.
Besties who think each other
still valuable for their personal growth.
Yeah,
but.
Yes.
I love that. Thank you so much for indulging us with that. We'll put something up on Instagram with all your selections, so make sure you head over to our Instagram. But lastly, before we go, Lane, what can you tell us about what is next for you? Do you have another book in the works? What's the situation?
Yeah, so my deal with Random House is a 2-book deal, so I owe them another. And I'm working on a book. The working title is The Vamp, and it's about a Broadway musical and like 3 women who are involved with like the original production and then a revival that's happening in the present day. And it's very like, you know, dark and feminist and dramatic. I can't really describe the plot of the book very well yet, but the musical that's like within the book is about the forbidden love between a female vampire and a hot priest. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Hell yeah.
We love us some hot priests.
We like, do.
I will be seated once again.
Oh my god, that sounds so exciting.
Lane, thank you so much for joining us today. We had so much fun, like, kind of getting into your brain a little bit. We will be seated if that Heath POV ever comes out. In fact, you know what? You can send it to us first. You know, that's fine. If you want to do that,
I'm going to be my beta readers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, please.
I got you. No. But no, we really appreciate it. So thank you so much for coming on.
This was so fun. Thank you for having me. And I'm so glad I got to like get into all the juicy spoilers because I haven't gotten to talk too much about that stuff yet.
Oh, good. Oh, we're so glad.
Yay. Such a fun conversation. We're just so grateful you're here. And you can read all of Lane's books anywhere that you get your books, ebooks. They're all out in print. And then also Lane has Audible Originals as well. So if you are an Audible listener, you can hop on over and read her books right now via audio on Audible. So, and Lane, you're at on Instagram for everybody who wanted to follow you.
At Lane Fargo.
Perfect. Yes, easy. Just name.
Yeah, and we'll have it linked below in the description of this episode. So if you want to hear more from Lane and want to keep up with her next release that we're so excited about, like I can't wait to see that hot priest in action.
In the musical.
You can follow her on Instagram, and then you can also follow us at Bring Your Own Pod, where we will be posting more stuff about the favorites. Kayla has lots and lots of pictures saved on her Pinterest board, so I'm going to force her to post on the pod. So you can catch us there. And if you love listening to us talk with Lane and would love to hear us talk to more authors, you can go ahead and rate and review this podcast 5 stars and tell us who you would love to see next on our Instagram. So thank you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.